Hey everyone, Mike Lanana here, joined by Teddy Cahill, who is at Auburn after catching a series against Texas A&M. And thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America College Podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ, helping health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify. And Teddy, this was a crazy weekend in college baseball. Crazy. We had such a difficult time last night trying to put together this top 25. There was a lot of movement. And if you haven't seen it yet, go on our website. It's front and center on our website, baseballamerica.com, our new college top 25 powered by Louisville Slugger. And if you look at it, you'll see that we have a whole new look top 10. Arkansas, after sweeping Kentucky, which was very impressive, moves up to number 4. Florida State at number 5. Auburn jumps to number 6 from 13. Ole Miss jumps from number 7, jumps to number 7 from 11. Kentucky drops to number 8. Vanderbilt moves up from 14 to 9. And the biggest jump of all, and I think this is going to make a lot of people who follow us very happy, NC State moved up from number 23 to number 10. We've heard a lot from NC State fans this year, and they really proved something this weekend by going to Clemson and sweeping the number 5 Tigers. So that's the new look top 10. No one dropped out. The back end of the poll all took care of business, but there was a lot of shuffling at the top. And really, one of the biggest things that stood out this weekend is just the start of SEC play. We knew it was going to cause some changes in the poll. We weren't sure exactly what to expect, though. Teddy, you caught one of the best series in the SEC this weekend firsthand. What were your impressions?
Yeah, I mean, when we have as many SEC teams ranked as we do, and there are 8 of them, and you know, we've talked all season long about how deep this league is. So once these teams start playing each other, you're going to find out a lot more, and they're going to beat up on each other a little bit, and as a result, we see changes. But, you know, I thought here in Auburn, you know, they were playing Texas A&M, the top 15 series, and, you know, A&M had been really good this season to date, and as had Auburn, and A&M comes in, and they lose the first 2 games to a really good Auburn team that beat them in a couple different ways. You know, they won on Friday night with T.C. Mize being in just a magnificent performance from the junior who, at this point, is starting to look like the leading candidate to be the 1-1 in June. He was fantastic, and then on Saturday, Auburn kind of outslugged A&M a little bit. They got behind early, but it's a team that plays with a lot of belief, and they were able to come back, and they exploded for 8 runs in the 8th inning to, you know, at that point, they took the lead and just blew the game wide open all at once, and so it was an impressive performance from Auburn, and, you know, that's a team that, you know, kind of last year they started the season really hot, and, you know, they swept Florida on opening weekend here, and I was at that series as well, and I saw a lot of similarities between those two teams, you know, Auburn last year and Auburn this year. They play with the same kind of belief. They're really strong on the mound, but I think this year the lineup's even deeper, and you know that's significant, and it makes them really, really dangerous. But the whole SEC, very impressive. Arkansas, incredibly loud weekend. You know, sweeping Kentucky at home. They hit 10 home runs in a doubleheader on Saturday. That offense really came alive, and they pitched it pretty well. And you know, that was the kind of performance from Arkansas that at least I had been waiting for. You know, I mean, I've said a lot that how much I like Arkansas, how much I believe in Arkansas this year, and that this weekend was what I was waiting for. It just seemed like, you know, that Kentucky team was one of the hottest teams in the country coming in, and Arkansas, you know, just it completely outslugged them, and you know, it was a really dominating performance, and I think it was one of the most impressive, probably the most impressive performance of the week.
I mean, you look at the scores in that series, my jaw was dropping. I mean, just following along with it online and on Twitter and video and all of that. I mean, these are blowouts. I mean, Arkansas, and this is a Kentucky team that, I mean, we were raving about on last week's podcast and the podcast before, and for good reason, because they perform really well. And you look at what Arkansas did to the Wildcats. I mean, they won Friday 9-4, then they won 14-2, then they won 16-9. I mean, and we've talked a lot about Kentucky's pitching staff. That's one of the strengths of the team. It's a deep weekend rotation and a talented weekend rotation, and it's pretty crazy to see those kinds of scores against a pitching rotation of that caliber. But at the same time, I think obviously it goes to show just how deep the SEC is this year, and that's something that we've been talking about since the beginning of the year. Just the depth in the conference is really on another level this year. It's always deep, but this year especially, it seems as though it's really from top to bottom super stacked and super talented.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more of these kinds of results. They're going to be surprising results, I think, every weekend. And if you just look at this weekend's schedule, it's incredibly loaded in the SEC again. You have Arkansas going to Florida. You have Auburn going to Kentucky. It's kind of crazy how many big-time marquee matchups this conference can produce on any given week. And, it's going to do it again next week. And I felt like something that went a little under the radar because of what Arkansas and what Auburn did was, Vanderbilt went into Starkville and swept that series. And Vanderbilt now is, I saw them the two previous weekends, and they're playing really well out in L.A. And, to go into Starkville and sweep the series is very impressive. And, the Commodores are really rolling here at this point. And, It's looking very good for them. The young players are finding their stride, and they've played the last three weekends on the road, and two of those have been winning weekends, and a third one, they were just denied on a walk off in Houston of a third winning weekend, and so I've been impressed with what the Commodores have been doing, and they're young, and we were a little. There's a lot of unknowns about them coming into the season, but they're making it known that those kids are ready to play and they're ready to compete in the SEC.
No, I thought that was very loud, too, and it's a team that, I mean, it's reflected in our top 25, them moving into the top 10 from number 14. To go to Mississippi State, and we've documented Mississippi State has had some obvious ups and downs this year with the coaching change and, getting swept opening weekend and all of that. But to do that at Duty Noble Field at Mississippi State, a place with such a rich and boisterous and just crazy atmosphere, to be able to go there and do that, it's really impressive for Vanderbilt, so I agree with you.
The Bulldogs didn't score for the first 17 innings of that series. I mean, they were the first two games. Vanderbilt went 5-0 on Friday night, and then they went 10-1 on Saturday. And that one was a ninth inning garbage time run for the Bulldogs. I mean, it's just incredible all around from Vanderbilt.
Yeah, no doubt. And then another series worth touching on, to me at least, is Florida at South Carolina. I had written a piece on baseballamerica.com on Mark Kingston, the new head coach at South Carolina from South Florida. He's obviously very familiar with the Gators. First weekend in SEC play, Florida wins it, the defending national champions, the number two team. That's what you would expect, and they took care of business. But it was a very hard-fought series. The final game, the rubber match, was a one-run game, a 3-2 game. It was right there. It was winnable for South Carolina. To me, the way they've played, even though they lost the series against Clemson and they lost the series to Florida, if I'm a South Carolina fan, I'm encouraged at the way that they fought. Obviously, at the end of the day, you're going to need some wins on your record. I mean, that's what's going to get you into the regionals, having those wins. But these experiences early on, I think, will bode well for South Carolina. And obviously, Florida is continuing to roll at the top of our poll. They stay at number two. Oregon State's continuing to roll. They stay at number one. So not much changing there.
And, I think that both of those teams went out and took care of business on the road. I thought I was pretty impressed by what Florida's offense did. I know that a lot of people last year were very concerned about the offense, and I felt like this year the offense had a chance to click a lot sooner, and it has, and I thought what Florida did offensively in Colombia was very impressive. Even though they lost that middle game, they still scored a bunch of runs, and I think they can be very encouraged now as they head home with the series win and get ready for a huge series against Arkansas this weekend. And then meanwhile, out west, Oregon State goes to Cal, and Cal's kind of a exciting young team that I know, Mike, I know you think really highly of, and that we all think pretty highly of. It's a team that's been playing really well. Andrew Vaughn is hitting as well as anyone in the country, and none of that fazes Oregon State. Pat Casey was suspended the first couple games of the series following an ejection last week. That didn't bother them. And they won just an incredible number of series here.
And they don't even have their best player. They don't have Nick Madrigal. It's insane what they're doing.
And they haven't lost a Pac-12 series since 2016. And it's just incredible how they just keep rolling through. And, they're doing it in kind of some different ways, and they just find ways to win. And, at this point, that's what we expect from the Beavers. But the sustained excellence is remarkable.
No, it certainly is. To be able to do that on the road against, like you said, I think a very talented Cal team, and I think a team that certainly does have a chance to make some noise this season and get to a regional. But to do that, to pick up really right where they left off, I mean, the Beavers went an absurd 27-3 in Pac-12 play last year. I keep repeating that number because I just can't believe it. It's still a year later. I have a hard time fathoming that. And to pick up right where they left off with all the you mentioned suspension, Nick Madrigal getting hurt, just everything that's going on there, to just keep rolling as if nothing, fazes them, it's really impressive, and it's a testament to the culture and the system there that Pat Casey and his coaching staff has built. Because certainly to be able to excel at this level, I mean, really in a very professional and consistent way, it's tough to do with a group of 18 and 22-year-olds. So it's certainly very impressive. And, the rest of the Pac-12, unfortunately, Stanford was not in action this weekend due to exams. I can only assume they ace their exams because they go to Stanford and they're probably pretty smart. Maybe that's a...
Those exams are probably pretty hard, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. We should probably do some digging and see just how they did. So Stanford stays put. Oregon State stays put at number one. It's very clear that those two teams are the class of the Pac-12 and are two national championship contenders. We've obviously touched on the SEC and the contenders that they have, and there are a lot of them in that conference. The ACC, though, at this point, is a different story. It's a bit perplexing. I was at an ACC series this weekend, Wake Forest and Louisville, and I'm going to dig into that conference and that series a little bit more. But first, let's get a word from our sponsor here, Health IQ. How would you like to save money for being active and physically fit? Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/BA or call 1-800-549-1664 to talk to a Health IQ agent. Mention the promo code BA for savings. Okay, so I was in Winston-Salem this past weekend, catching a series between Wake Forest and Louisville, as I mentioned, and after this series, and also concurrently after what NC State did at Clemson, I'm just throwing my hands up and giving up on figuring out the ACC right now, because it's a weird year in the conference. Louisville, we've talked a lot about Louisville, a team that has lost pretty much all the key players that you've talked about with Louisville over the last few years. Brennan McKay, obviously the first one who comes to mind. Guys like Drew Ellis, Funkhauser, Birdies. All the Birdies. There are no more Birdies left. Just a lot of the key pieces are off that team. It's a whole new team. It's a young core. They were coming off a strong opening weekend, though, against UNC. They took that series. But they come to Wake, and Wake Forest handles them. They win the series 2 out of 3 games. They have now won series against Florida State, who is number 3 when they came to Winston-Salem, and Louisville, who is number 12 when they came to Winston-Salem. But Wake Forest overall is 9-11 and 4-2 in the ACC. So figure that out. So you have that.
It remains incredible. I mean, that's a Wake Forest team that, you know, I thought was pretty good coming into the year, and then they had some suspensions, they started very poorly, and now they've figured it out again. But I mean, it's a bit of a head scratcher overall.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I would say, my observations of them, I got a good look at them this weekend, and I saw them on opening day as well. I think their weekend rotation, you can make a case that when they're all healthy and throwing well, it could be the top rotation in the ACC. I would have said coming into this year, Florida State, especially with Tyler Holton at the front, but with him out with Tommy John surgery, that changes the complexion of that rotation a bit. Carolina's certainly in the conversation, but losing Luca Delatri for an undetermined period of time with an injury, that's a big blow. You look at Wake Forest, and I came away very impressed this weekend. I had my second look at Griffin Roberts, who was even better than opening day, which was a very good start from him. He struck out 13 in Louisville's lineup. His slider was absolutely filthy. I have multiple videos on Twitter, one that's gone low-key kind of viral. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out and give me that RT. He was really filthy on that Friday night. And he's a guy who a lot of questions coming into this year as far as, is he a reliever or a starter? He's been a reliever throughout his college career. They've tried him as their Friday starter this year. And I'm starting to buy the whole starter thing a little bit more on the pro level. He still needs to develop a changeup. He threw, out of 124 pitches on Friday, he threw exactly 0 changeups. But his fastball-slider combination, those are 2+ pitches. The slider is one of the best, if not the best. I mean, along with Casey Mize's splitter, it's one of the best pitches in the draft class this year. And he showed a ton of confidence with it. His fastball, he was maintaining his velocity. His 102nd pitch was a 95-mile-per-hour fastball for a strikeout. So he was special. But then behind him, you have Morgan McSweeney, another converted reliever, who was up to 94, touching 94 frequently early on with a good slider. He ran out of steam in the middle innings against Louisville. That was the game they won. They came back after trailing early. And that was really a case of him just being a converted reliever and just not having that built-up stamina yet. And then Sunday, you have Colin Palouse, who really just shut down Louisville by throwing a sinker just low in the zone, in on the hands, 91 to 93, good late movement on it. You know, good feel for his off-speed pitches and pounding the corners. Those are 3 very solid arms. Rain Supple, sophomore closer, has been very good for them out of the pen. They're 9-11, though, and a big part of that is just the depth beyond those guys really isn't there. They're still trying to figure out the pecking order. But those 3 starters are as good as any in the ACC, and they're a dangerous team. Even though they're currently sitting at 9-11, you'll certainly see them, I think, above 500 sooner than later. As for Louisville, it wasn't a good look this weekend. There's no question. Adam Wolf was very good on Friday night, but neither Shea Smitty or Riley Thompson could follow up. Shea Smitty was beat up pretty early on, gave up 6 runs to Wake. He's an 88 to 89 guy. He was leaving the fastball up in the zone, and Wake Forest hitters were taking advantage. It was a big weekend for Wake Forest freshman hitters, who have some big shoes to fill with Gavin Sheets and Stuart Fairchild and guys like that going on to the draft. But it was a good weekend for them. Riley Thompson on Sunday for Louisville, a guy who's been up to the mid and upper 90s in the past. He was 90 to 92, threw like 60 pitches in 2 innings, only lasted 2 innings. It was not a very good outing for him. You know, Louisville certainly, they're going to be okay. They have talent. It's just they need to figure out some things. They need to get healthier and really just figure out the right lineup and the right pitching rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we look at Louisville, I mean, first of all, they never got – they didn't get blown out here. You know, they lost on Friday night 2-1. They ran into the guy that's pitching like the best pitcher in the ACC right now and very well may be the best pitcher in the ACC. You know, that happens. And then on Sunday, you know, they lost 6-3, and, you know, it's not great, but they played – a pretty tough team in a really tough road environment pretty well. And I think for a young Louisville team, there's positives to take from that. There are positives to take from the way they came back on Saturday. And I just know that the rotation that Louisville's throwing out there now, it's going to look different today. If everything goes to plan, Nick Bennett is just coming back. He missed a few weeks here at the start of the year. He's just working his way back. That was a guy that's a freshman All-American in the rotation last year. And,
he pitched well out of the pen this weekend. He did. Bennett did make an appearance this weekend and pitched well. So that is encouraging for sure.
Yeah. I think he pitched against Texas Tech in the midweek. And so those were his first two appearances since an abbreviated opening weekend appearance. And so getting him back is big. They're still hopeful that they're going to get Michael McAveen back from Tommy John surgery in the next month or so. That's a guy that started opening weekend as a freshman in their rotation. So, if they can get a little healthier, I think that their pitching is going to be in good shape. And I still feel really good about that team in general. But the ACC as a whole is a mess, and we thought that coming into this weekend that Clemson was the best team in the league. They're ranked fifth, and we're really impressed by what they've done to that point. And NC State, a team that we've been a little skeptical of, frankly. The schedule had been very soft to this point, but I can't really talk about their soft schedule anymore because they just went to Clemson and swept a series. They'd never done that before as a program, and the Wolfpack, they held down a really powerful Clemson offense to one run over the first 2 days. And, Elliot Avent told me that the wind was blowing in at Clemson those 2 days and that helped. But, North Carolina State still found a way to score runs. Clemson didn't. And, Avent really credited pitching coach Scott Foxhall for the way he called pitches, the way that the Wolfpack were set up to face the Tigers. And, the North Carolina State offense, we knew they were going to hit. That wasn't really a question. But the way it's rolling right now, it's very impressive. Brett Kinnaman's playing incredible. Josh McClain has been very good. He was a leadoff hitter. They got Evan Edwards stepping up, taking over the cleanup spot. Will Wilson has been, really, really solid. He hit two home runs in Sunday's finale. And they're doing this all without Steven Patera, who's been a regular in their lineup for the last few years. And, he's out with a hamstring injury still for a couple more weeks. But it's an incredibly offensive team. That doesn't even include guys like Brad Debo and Brock Dethridge, who it's just 1-9, really. It's just very strong for the Wolfpack. And if they can find enough pitching, and they did this weekend, it was a little unconventional at times. Sunday essentially was a bullpen game. But if they can find enough pitching, throughout the season, I mean, that's an NC State team that's a force to be reckoned with in a conference that, is wide open for the taking. They're in first place in whatever division they're in. And,
Atlantic.
Mike's got to help me out on the divisions. They're in a really good spot here 2 weeks in.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you mentioned the pitching side of things, and that's the part of it. That's the part of the equation that impresses me most about their weekend, because obviously we've talked a lot about Clemson's lineup. I think from top to bottom, it's up there as far as one of the best lineups in college baseball. And the fact that they were able to shut them out on Friday and hold them to just five combined runs the entire weekend is, to me, I mean, it's the loudest part of that series win for NC State, because, as you said, we felt pretty confident that they were going to have a good offense this year, and I'm not surprised to see them score at Clemson. But for them to be able to hold that lineup in the likes of Seth Beer and Logan Davidson and Chris Williams and all those guys who have a lot of pop, a lot of power, a lot of tools, to be able to hold them to just five runs on an entire weekend, that's certainly really impressive for NC State. And, they had played a soft schedule to this point, but I'm starting to drink the NC State Kool-Aid a little bit here. I'm starting to believe. It certainly was a hashtag statement, as Wolfpack fans like to say. And you could read more about it, as Teddy was referencing, he chatted with Elliot Avent. You could read more about it in his off-the-bat piece on our website. Elsewhere in the ACC, We would be remiss if we didn't mention Duke and what Duke has done to this point. Again, it's another team in the ACC that isn't a traditional power, at least in terms of baseball. Obviously, basketball is a different story, but in terms of baseball, hasn't been a traditional power. Just made its first regional in a long time, a couple seasons ago. And, you know, but Chris Pollard and that coaching staff has done a great job on the recruiting trail, bringing in a lot of talent. There's a lot of buzz about Duke coming into this year from the local scouts and just the scouting community at large because of prospects like Griffin Conine, who has some of the most power in the college game, if not the most power in the college game, and Jimmy Herron. And, you know, really, Duke has done this not just with those two guys, because those guys have been up and down offensively to this point. They've done it. It's been a whole team effort. Yeah, yeah. It's been. I saw Conine very good. I went to the one game where he was. I mean, he homered and then hit a double off the wall and left. But yes, no, he's been mostly down. So they've done this. It's not just those two guys. They've done it as a whole team effort. They've pitched well. They had a really young pitching staff last year. A talented pitching staff. They brought in some talented recruits, but very young and inexperienced. And those guys are growing up a little bit. They've developed. They're showing that they've made at least a little bit of a jump, if not a bigger jump. And if they can continue to pitch the way they have, to have this whole team effort that they have going on, they're a very dangerous club. You look at what they've done the first two weekends in ACC play. They win a series against a then-ranked Virginia team. I'm not pushing the panic button yet, but I'm kind of – my finger's kind of on it. You know, they've had some injuries and don't look quite the same. They were able to come back in a really hard-fought series against Boston College this weekend, but Virginia's not off to a great start here in ACC play. But Duke beats Virginia opening weekend, and then they beat Miami, another traditional ACC power. Again, a team that's down in terms of talent the last 2 years, but they beat them, and that's really loud for Duke to be able to do that the first two weekends. They're in first place in that other division, the Coastal Division in the ACC, and it's a little strange to see, but I believe we talked about this on our last podcast. You look at their schedule and you look at their division opponents, that's at least this year the weaker division in the ACC, it seems. I don't know, we could be wrong. I have no idea. But we might not know. It's a stronger one. I don't know. But so far they lead that. They're tied with UNC, who swept Pittsburgh this weekend. Finally, you know, UNC getting on the right winning track there, something that needed to be done for them. They finally start hitting a little bit and swinging the bats. We'll see if they carry that over into some tougher competition. Florida State's coming to town this weekend coming up. But Duke has been very impressive so far. NC State's been really impressive so far. I still don't know who the best team in this conference is. I still want to say it's maybe Florida State, maybe Clemson in terms of talent, but I really don't know if, and we talked about this a little bit, if there's a team that you could put your finger on right now and say, hey, this is a national championship contender.
Yeah, it's really tough. You know, right now in my constantly updating A for Omaha and this week's Off the Bat, Florida State's the only ACC team that I have in there. And, you know, if Clemson had won this weekend, you know, they might have found themselves in the field. I don't know. But, you know, it's rough right now trying to pick out teams in this league that you feel confident about, and especially when we start looking at the postseason, because the thing about, you know, both Clemson and NC State is that they're so offensive. And, you know, Clemson has had, you know, they haven't, Monty Lee's had them host regionals in back-to-back years, and they haven't been able to win a regional. You know, and this team's set up in kind of the same way, that it's very hitting-heavy and that the pitching is okay. It's good enough to win conference, but you could in a regional setting, and like last year, Vanderbilt comes in, and, you know, they don't have anyone to match up with Kyle Wright.
No.
You know, and it's going to be the same story for Clemson this year. You know, if they get the wrong matchup, you know, they're going to be out-pitched, and at that point they have to prove that they can hit elite, probably SEC pitching, and, you know, that's tough. And NC State's kind of in the same boat. You know, it's been, obviously, they're really good at getting to regional finals. They've made it to three in a row, maybe four in a row. They just haven't been able to quite get over the hump, and you know, State fans know all about that, and you know, just how tough that's been for them. And you know, this team, I feel like, is kind of in the same way as Clemson, that you know, they're going to hit a lot, and but if they get matched up at the wrong spot, you know, are they going to be able to handle the elite pitching that they would then have to face in a regional or super regional? And you know, Duke is so young. Louisville is pretty young themselves, and you know, trying to pick out a team from that group that can make a deep run in the postseason is tricky right now. And for me right now, it's still Florida State. I still believe you know, the experience, depth of that team. But I'll tell you, without Tyler Holton, you know, it looks a lot different. And then when you talk about trying to win in Omaha without your ace, you know, it's one thing to go through the ACC. It's one thing to go through the first couple rounds of the tournament without that guy. But you know, to go out on the biggest stage and not have him available, I mean, that's going to be a tall order for the Seminoles. And you know, in general, I mean, that's where the ACC is right now. It's a weird place. But you know, it's not just that conference. The Big 12 is suffering from that right now. You know, Texas Tech and TCU, the two teams we liked the most coming into the season, you can start Texas into that too. I mean, they've all kind of been scuffling out of the gate. You know, Texas Tech has been going so well. This road trip was really tough on them. And, you know, there's no shame in that, but they're also missing their ace in Stephen Gingery. You know, the Pac-12 has a couple elite teams. The SEC has several elite teams. The rest of the country, right now at least, is a little lacking in terms of elite teams.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And the thing to me, and you touched on this, talking about some of the powers in the ACC lacking on the pitching side, you know, having that dominant rotation. And really, you know, you compare pitching with those elite teams in the SEC and their rotations, and in the Pac-12, I mean, Stanford with Beck and Bubich and Eric Miller, and obviously, you know, you look at Florida with Singer and Coar and Dyson, and just so many, and Auburn with Mize. I mean, it's just nonstop. It seems like every team has multiple aces, and you look at the ACC, and you don't really see that. I mean, that's why, I mean, I'm talking about Wake Forest as maybe the top rotation. I think it is in terms of stuff. You know, North Carolina, maybe with Baum and Bergner, if they're able to pitch the way that they pitched this weekend, if they're able to continue that, they certainly have the stuff to be dominant. Losing Delatry for however long they don't have him is certainly a big blow there. But yeah, there aren't a lot of pitchers right now in the ACC who scare you. And that's just not the case in the SEC and the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah, and you know, that's going to be a thing all season long. Is you know, in the ACC, there are like a handful of true Friday starters, and you know, I think the teams are really offensive. It's just a very offensive year in the ACC.
I am offended.
In the postseason, is going to be fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, it is offensive. I am offended because I can't figure it out. But yeah, no, you know, those were, you know, for at least for me, those were the big storylines from this weekend, from what I saw. You know, Teddy, is there anything else that you would like to touch on here?
Yeah, I think that you know, first of all, I have a few things. First of all, shout out to Southern Cal and USF. They both threw combined no hitters. Shane McClanahan was dominant for USF on Friday night. 15 strikeouts in 6 innings. His numbers are silly. Looking forward to him playing a little step up in competition when American play starts. I think it's next week for them. So a couple more no-hitters. The year the no-hitter continues. In the Big Ten, Minnesota, huge series win at TCU. The Gophers are going really well. You know, we've had Indiana ranked all season long. Illinois has been ranked the last couple weeks. Minnesota was a team I felt really, I was encouraged about coming into the season. They get a marquee series win. We'll see if they're able to carry that over now. And Ohio State is
the Ohio State, Teddy. The Ohio State.
The Ohio State. You know, and the Buckeyes. There, I mean, that is not a team. You know, Minnesota, I felt like, could make a run at the conference title this year. Ohio State is not a team coming into the year that I was looking at potentially doing that. But they have the second-best record in the Big Ten. They're on a 6-game winning streak. They have wins against Southern Miss, Coastal, 2 wins against UNC Wilmington. It's an impressive group. Their offenses are really going hot. And, you know, I've just been very intrigued by what the Buckeyes have put together coming off of a pretty disappointing 2017. But they're going really well now here in 2018, and you can hear more about that also and off the bat. I don't want to get started on the Big Ten because I'll probably just keep rolling. So we'll keep moving it here. And recognize on a more somber note that, you know, Augie Garrido, legendary Texas and Fullerton coach, the winningest coach in NCAA history, died on Thursday. And that was a very emotional for a lot of people in college baseball. He had touched so many lives. So many people in college baseball played for him, played under him, coached with him, and he was a very beloved figure around the game. And you saw that outpouring throughout the weekend. You know, I know several, I saw several places putting either his number 16 or his initials on their mound. And Cal State Fullerton, the place that he built, essentially put his number huge in center field. And you know, the both the Titans and the Longhorns, the two teams he's most associated with, had big sweeps this weekend in what I imagine was just a very emotional weekend for everyone associated with those programs, especially at Texas, where those players, for the most part, were recruited by him, and you know, several of them played under him as well. So just it was very impressive to see the outpouring from the baseball community, both in college and pro ball, and just the way that extended into this weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was certainly, you know, there's no question what an impact Augie Garrido made on the college game. You know, Teddy and myself, we're a bit younger and don't have as much of a personal relationship with him as some of the, you know, the coaches who've been in the game for as long as they have. But you talk to people around baseball, and when his name comes up, it's just nothing but respect for what he did, what he built at Cal State Fullerton and Texas, and just his value and his wisdom and what he imparts on young men and helping them really become men and helping them the rest of their lives. There's no question that he is such an impactful force in college baseball, a legend, obviously the winningest coach. And certainly his loss is felt around the country, and thoughts and prayers go to the Texas and Cal State Fullerton and all the communities that he had been a part of, his family and friends and everyone in the game that he had touched, certainly. So our best thoughts and prayers to all of those people. And, you know, Teddy, it's been another wild week, obviously, in college baseball. There's been a lot going on. It's only going to get wilder, I'm sure, these next couple of weekends. There are going to be some more difficult calls in our top 25, a lot more movement. So make sure that you continue to follow us. You can follow Teddy at Ted Cahill on Twitter. You can follow me at MLanana. That's MLANANANA. Rewind and replay that if you didn't hear that. And it's tricky. And we appreciate you listening and reading, as always, and following along. And we look forward to continuing this this week and podcasting again next Monday. So thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America College Podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ helps health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify. Thanks again. Talk to you guys next week.